Now, this is an interview with Gerard Sherman on the 25th of August, 1992, a Tuesday. And it's his own recollections and association with Albury Church. Can I start with a little CV, just to find out how long you've known Albury Church?
Yes. I suppose I've known it all my life, but I was brought up in the Catholic Apostolic Church. So that, while that was operating until 1946, I very seldom came to this church at all. In 1946, the Catholic Apostolic Church was closed, and then I and my mother used to come to this church. And I've known it ever since then, except for 7 years when I was in Devon.
So you say yourself and your mother, this is your in your boyhood?
No, I was, at that time, in 1946, I must have been 34. I was born in 1912, so... Mm.
So, can you remember your first recollections of the church? Can you remember the first time you saw it or went into it?
The only recollection I have is of the time of Munich. There was a service praying for peace, and I remember everyone came, and I suppose it was just after Harvest Festival, and the church was beautifully decorated with flowers, and I was very surprised and taken aback. I didn't realize it was harvest, and I thought that was very nice. That's about the first recollection I have of the church, I think.
Put that in context for me a little bit, at the time of Munich.
Well, that would have been in 1938, and you, as you know, there was threats of war, which was averted for about a year by Chamberlain, and as I say, we all came here to pray for peace. That's the only first time I can remember it, actually.
Quite a solemn occasion.
Oh yes, it was, yes. And I don't recall any special services or anything. I do remember when, after the war, these chancel windows were dedicated. The old ones were blown out by a flying bomb, and they were dedicated, and it was an evening service, and a dark, and the guy Botting fixed up some floodlights outside to shine on the lights. But since the lights were run from the church, in order not to overburden the electricity, all the lights in the church were turned out. And then the lights outside were turned on. And it was most effective to see the bright lights coming through these new windows.
Mm.
I recall that.
And for many years you were church warden here.
Yes.
What did your duties involve?
Well, I suppose looking after the fabric of the church and the contents of the church and the churchyard, and supporting and helping the incumbent in any way one can.
Mm-hmm. How much are you sort of personally responsible for it? I mean, does the rector or vicar of the day hold you wholly responsible for the running of the place, or isn't it that sort of a duty?
No, it's not really. I think he, nowadays, the rector himself does an awful lot of work, mm-hmm. but he doesn't do anything rash without consulting the church wardens, you know.
How many church wardens are there, then?
There are two.
Mm-hmm. And so each Sunday you were responsible for things to do with the services, but you were also responsible for the fabric of the church.
First, responsible for the fabric of the church, yes, and seeing it was kept in good repair and that sort of thing, and looking after the inside of the church. And I think one was legally responsible for it, but as I say, the rector would consult with you and do things with you all the time.
Were there any particular building developments or modernization developments in your time as church warden?
No, I don't think so. We've recently had a new heating system put in. That was very new last winter, which we've been wanting for many years. I don't think it's anything very outstanding. Not in my time, no.
Mm-hmm. It's an unusual church, to my eye, in that it's in brick.
Yes, it is. I'm told that Mr. Drummond, who had it, built it, he was the lord of the manor. I'm told he had it built on the style of a church in Normandy. And he went away, and when he came back, he was horrified to find it was built in brick. Yeah, and of course it is very ugly outside, but it's nice inside, actually. Mm.
Is that a general perception, that it's ugly?
Oh, yes, I think so, yes. Everyone says, oh, it's nice inside, you know, when they come in.
Memories of your time here, both as church warden and as a member of the congregation, do you remember great sermons or anecdotes of particular incidents associated with the church? I always have recollections of a very fiery preacher when I was a boy in the church that I was in.
No, I don't recall any. I don't think we've ever had any fiery preachers.
Is that because we're in Surrey, do you suppose?
I don't know what it is. No.
I'd like very much to see inside.
Yes,
if you could point out some of the things that you feel a visitor to the church should see. I've got a key. You've got one as well, have you?
Yes.
Oh, right. Splendid. Now, this is the vestry door, I believe.
This is the vestry door, yes. This would be the choir vestry if we had a choir, but we don't have a choir at the moment.
Can you remember when there was a choir?
Oh, yes. We've had a choir until a year or so ago. We had a very large choir, actually. But they all got, they grew up, and we don't seem to have had any replacements.
Well, this is most interesting, isn't it? This is a domed roof at this end.
Yes.
It reminds me very strongly of St. Martin in the Fields Church in London.
Oh, does it?
Yes. Which has got the same sort of roof.
Ah, yes. This was added, apparently, in 1870, I think, the chancel and the apse. These are the windows which were replaced after the war.
And these are the ones with the lights were put outside?
That's right, yes.
And you were sitting where at the time? Down in the main body of the church?
Yes, right.
Mm. What do they portray?
That one is St. Paul, and the other one is St. Peter. Mm-hmm. And that, I believe, is Christ triumphant.
Right. And how was the money raised for this?
Part of it was given by Helen Lloyd. I don't know if you heard of her. She used to live in Albury. She was a great supporter of the church. And part, I suppose, by donations. Mm-hmm.
And I'm now trying to put this in perspective. This is just after the war.
Just after the war,
1943. So we're talking about
1948, 49, yes. Something like that, I should think. Yes.
We're talking about very nearly 50 years ago.
Yes, yeah, must be, yes. Mm.
And you have been coming, man and boy, or young man
I've been
and boy.
Coming since about 1946, I suppose.
What else?
Well, this is the Northumberland Chapel. It was wasn't built specially. It was converted into a chapel after the war in memory of one of the Dukes of Northumberland. I think it probably says something. Yeah.
You can read it. The chapel was dedicated by the Archbishop of Canterbury on the 4th of July 1939 in memory of Alan Ian, 8th Duke of Northumberland, KGB, CBE, MVO. Yeah. The gift of his wife, Helen, is it Magdalen? Duchess of Northumberland. And his son, Henry George Allen, 9th Duke of Northumberland.
Mm. Ah, yes.
So this presumably was something else before that, or was it built on?
No, I think it was just a transom. No, it wasn't built on, no.
Now, the organ pipes are up on a balcony, but I'm sure it's not called that in ecclesiastical terms. But
organ loft, I think we call it.
Loft. So the organ itself...
The organ itself is there.
...is just up here.
Yes, yeah.
And it looks quite an impressive organ.
Well, it is. It's really too big for the church. people sitting behind tend to get blown away. It was built by, was given to the church by Miss Capados in 1934, 1935, I think. It's really too big for the church. But most organists eventually learn to play it quietly. But they do, on occasion, love to let it go.
I must record a bit of it when it's going, so I can put that against
quite,
what you're saying.
Yes.
So they're waved down by the members of the congregation, are they?
Well, we always like to, but you can't really see. And of course, he doesn't, sitting up there, you don't hear it so much. It's only at the back of the church that you really get too much noise.
Well, it's one way of making the congregation come to the front.
Yes. Well, we've done that also by we've removed some of the rear seats there.
Yes.
Because we always find everyone likes to sit at the back.
And then a choir. You've had a choir here in years gone by.
We've had a choir for many years. When I first recall the church, we had choir boys, one or two males. The choir boys never opened their mouths in those days, as far as I could see. But when we came back from Devon in 1976, there was a good choir then, and to my amazement, there were several girls, and to my amazement, they really did sing. But it's unfortunate that the girls have grown up, and we've got no replacements. These are the two war memorials. That was the First World War, and that was the Second World War. Figure there was done by a local artist.
Just looking at those memorials, many of these people must have been people that you knew.
Yes, I suppose so.
Second World War.
Yes,
certainly.
I suppose Second World War, certainly, yes.
What impact was there on the village?
Well, full of evacuees. Otherwise, I suppose, not more than anywhere else. Mm. We had an awful lot of troops around, Canadians, camped in the woods for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. And we have one or two pictures at the back here, which is quite unusual for a church, in fact.
I suppose so. I don't know where they came from or why they came, I must say. I don't think they're very beautiful. This was this embroidery was done by Miss Drew, who lived on Aubrey Heath for many years.
Now, what does this show? It's St. George and the Dragon, isn't it?
St. George and the Dragon, yes.
No easy hopes or lies shall bring us to our goal, but iron sacrifice of body, will, and soul.
Oh, yeah.
It's lovely. And this is locally made as well?
It's locally made, yes. Oh, yes. Mm. She did that. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about embroidery, but it's supposed to be good.
As treasurer, this is obviously, although a comparatively modern church in relation to many of the churches that we have, nonetheless, there's a lot of work to be done.
Oh, tremendous, yes.
What sort of expenditure is required on the church?
Well, a couple of years ago, we had to spend about £8,000 on renewing the leads in the valleys over the transept there. The outside of the church badly wants, the brickwork wants repointing. And the tower is in the same way, the brickwork is bad. And as you see, the church badly wants redecorating inside. It's looking a bit dilapidated and shabby.
And how does one go about raising the money? Because obviously there's a certain amount that comes from congregations, but
yes,
that we no way can cover it.
We get a good income from the congregations, but then to do a big work like redecorating all the brickwork, we'd probably have to make a general appeal in the parish. We do get a slight grant from the diocese sometimes, and we can get loans from the Central Finance Board, but otherwise we've got to raise all the money ourselves.
And what are the mechanics of doing that? I mean, suppose you decide, or it is decided that the the pointing must be done. How do you go about agreeing that? Is it your suggestion?
No. Well, it would be the church warden's suggestion. We're fortunate now, one of our church wardens is John Fulsham, who's an architect. So he's very helpful in that sort of thing. And it's really a case of consulting an architect. Each church has to have an official architect, and we consult him. He makes a quinquennial examination of all the churches, and he gives a report. And we look at this and see what we can possibly do and what we can defer. And the brickwork is not all that urgent at the moment, I don't think. And I'm glad to say we had the roof examined, and that was found to be good enough for 10 years, apparently. So that relieved us of an anxiety, because we had thought the slates were going.
How do you feel about it, trying to keep up a building like this? Because it's a real battle against
the
element, isn't it?
It is. It's, of course, it's far too big for really, and even the heating, all this space, it takes an awful lot of heating. It would be very nice if we had a nice small church.
Why do you suppose Henry Drummond built such a big one? Did he expect the village to expand?
I imagine that there was far more people came to church in those days. I think most parishioners would have come to church on a Sunday.
And also, I suppose, they felt that if they built big, it was some indication of their faith.
Yes, I suppose so, yes.
Yes.
Of course, it wouldn't have, without the chancel, when it was originally built, it wouldn't have looked so big.
That's true. When was that made as an extension?
1870.
Mm. So it would have been quite a square sort of a church.
Yes, but I think there was a small chancel there, up to that first window. Mm-hmm.
And then, do the parishioners themselves do a certain amount of work? I mean, for instance, the interior decorations here. I mean, could that be done by the parish?
Some of it could, except, of course, for the height. I don't think any of us are really keen on getting up to that sort of height. It needs scaffolding, really. But we do talk of self-help in some of the smaller things. And a lot is done.
Mm-hmm. Last of all, if you can cast your mind back over this period of time, 50 years, are there any particular incidents or events or happy memories that you have? I mean, you've given me a couple of lovely examples of the time when the lights were put on outside so that you could see the new windows, and are coming here to pray just before the Second World War.
Yes.
Have there been other great events which have been marked here in the church?
Well, I suppose it was an event when our present rector was introduced and installed. That was a big service, a very big service, completely full church.
Mm, that's interesting, because how many rectors do you remember over this period of time?
I remember Canon Skeen. I never actually came to him, heard him in church. Then there was Mr. Singh. He must have come after the war, and he left, I suppose, in 1960 or something like that. Then there was Mr. Orme, and now there's Dudley Gummer.
So comparatively few.
Yes, because Stuart Orme was here for a very long time. Mm-hmm. He must have been here 25 years or so.
What memories do you have of him? I mean, what was he like as a person? I mean, can you do me a little sketch, as it were?
I never got very intimate with him. He took the services extremely well. I always felt when he was preaching, he was just as likely to quote from Aristotle as from the Bible. But obviously he prepared his sermons very carefully. But I didn't always agree with them, I must say.
Have you a preference when it comes to sermons? Do you like a sort of fairly intellectual sermon or what?
I used to like Mr. Singh's sermons, because he prepared them very carefully and wrote them all out, and then he delivered them as if they were verbatim, you know, as if they were extempore.
Mm.
and he spoke, he preached very well. Again, I didn't. He was one of these people who, if he had doubts, tended to want to share them with you, you know.
Which made his congregation very uncertain.
Yes, well, it might do, yes. I always felt it was unnecessary.
Yes.
And I remember when I disapproved of his sermon, I used to pick up the prayer book and start reading 39 articles. His wife, who sat just behind me, spotted this, and she said, she always knew when I disapproved of his sermon.
Now, Mr. Singh, that sounds as if he... Was he English?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm. Yes, Irish.
Irish,
you know, S-Y-N-G-E.
Ah, yes, yes. And as an Irishman, presumably a good speaker.
When I say Irish, I don't really know whether he was Irish, but just an Irish name.
An Irish name, mm. Yes, yes. And then, of course, the Reverend Gummo has been quite recently installed. Tell me a tiny bit. You say that was a very big service when he...
Well, it was. It always is a big service. Mm. Everyone comes. And a whole number of people came from his old parish up in Luton. So that was a bit... We had to squeeze them in somehow. And then the archdeacon comes and does all the work, so to speak. And you process around the church with the church wardens leading, and you go to the font and you bless the font, and you go to outside and the rector rings the bell, you go to various parts of the church, sort of process around.
The only other thing that occurs to me, Gerard, is have you had sort of family occasions here? Have you a family and have been here for family events in the church?
We must have been here. No family weddings here, I think. We must have been here for family funerals a lot of times.
Yes,
yes. Yes. First one, I suppose, was my grandfather. He died in 1929. I don't recall the service at all, but I do recall driving in procession through the village, and all the blinds in the houses were drawn. That was a mark of respect in those days, apparently.
Mm. And great people who've lived and worshipped here, who you've known in the village, and who've been regular churchgoers here, who would you say were the most significant members of the congregation over the years?
I suppose the most significant in my day was Helen Lloyd, who lived at Weston Lodge. She was a great person, a great supporter of the church, and a great stickler for all that was, you know, properly done and that sort of thing.
Tell me a tiny bit about her. Was she? What was her sort of background, and what did she do as a living?
Oh, she looked after her mother, and they were well-to-do. I think there was some connection with the Lloyds Bank, but I'm wrong there. Her connection was with Stewarts and Lloyds, the steel makers, and as I say, she was a great supporter of the church and a great supporter of everything in the village.
And you say she was a stickler for having things done the right
way,
yes,
in the church. Oh, yes. Oh, quite. In social life, you know.
In what way in the church? Because as a church warden, she obviously tackled you about things.
Yes, I don't recall any. But I'm quite sure no one would do anything which Helen Lloyd didn't approve of.
That's lovely.